You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Pope Bell, an American visual artist best known for his work in performance and intervention in public art. He's also produced work in numerous other mediums, including painting, photography, and theater. He was included in the 2002 Whitney Biennial and is a Guggenheim Fellow. Pope Bell, thanks so much for being with us today.
Doc, what's it with you?
I know that you're working on a lot of different things. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're working on now? And how did you come upon that project? What started that? There's a number of things I want to talk to you about, including your early career. But one thing I wanted to ask you about was the National Endowment for the Arts grant that you received, which was rescinded. I know that eventually did tour, the E-Racism tour, but why? What was your reaction to that, and what do you think is really going on there?
I get the peeps.
And in a way, the people that came to your I don't want to say rescue, but the foundation that picked things up were the Andy Warhol Foundation, the visual arts that was kind of. It seems to be a wonderful moment in the art world that they responded and supported you after that. Interesting, and let's move back to some of your earlier works and perhaps childhood. What was it that first got you involved in the arts as a child? Do you remember first experiences with art
or growing up.
It sounds like there was a little bit of horseback riding as a kid. Was that part of your experience?
No, in the case I did not do what it wanted that I wanted that first.
And in terms of languages and your family speaking languages, you know, and obviously from this interview, your interest in language, was that something that you experienced at a young age? And what was your experience in college? How did you end up in going to school for all of that?
Importante, det var det. Så de lidt som ikke det betyder, så de kan supporte, yeah.
And upon graduating, what was the first work that you became involved in? Wow, so that was very exciting.
Yeah.
That was a beginning of a kind of peak experience and maybe a recognition that the art world was kind of warm and And then, you know, things evolved in a number of ways, but I was introduced to you in the 2002 Whitney Biennial, and that's when I became most aware of when you were doing the Superman crawl. Can you talk a little bit about that Superman crawl?
The foot washing. Yeah, the foot washing. The foot washing.
Yes, I was for washing and
yeah,
things. But you were crawling. You were crawling
at
an incredibly slow rate, and as Superman, as a kind of anti-Superman almost. And what did you think of the curators there of Deborah Singer and the other people that were running the Whitney program at that time? That's interesting because the experience I had there, of course, being in it the same year was an interesting. What I thought was a kind of disconnect between the museum and the world of performance, and perhaps you experienced some of this. And I was told by the curator they didn't think we should sell videos of our work in the shop, or even that they should buy documentation from us because our art was about giving everything away. Meanwhile, the way he has parties where Volkswagen sponsors them and they park Volkswagen outside. That's true. It is a big scene there. Was that a tension you were aware of? It's everybody has a different opinion about it, I suppose. But I recently was interviewing Chrissy Isles, who seems to be the only one that's still there at the Whitney after many years. And she has the opinion that artists shouldn't be trying to get any money for their work or even thinking about the market or money, and that if your work is important, it will simply rise to the surface. And while I admire that kind of what appears to be purity, you know, I think we all know that there's very important work that's never discovered or is discovered much too late for the artist to benefit from it.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that kind of perspective of curators looking towards, you know, their perspective on artists alive? Exactly. You know, I think I feel the same way. You know, when was it that you began getting interested in language? I know you talked in this particular language at a presentation at the Tate. What gave birth to this language and its origin?
The idea of the pig,
what's the reaction after the Tate? How did people feel about the performance there? Did you feel like understood much of what you said? Do you think it's particularly difficult for the British? So the way it was also very, there's a performative aspect to it, which in itself has merit, as does, you know, a performance of movement or anything else, where we're feeling and learning something from the sounds and that we're pulling different meanings from, almost like a Rorschach test. You know, I remember the first experience. I want to talk a little bit about e-racism, and I want to talk a little bit about, you know, the whole notion of, which is how I was first introduced to the kind of friendliest black artist in America. And it was when I was going around Chelsea and I was posting up posters myself of trying to get carpentry work. And I see this poster that was a little 8x10 thing, and I'm not going to quote it exactly right, but hopefully it won't be too offensive, although it seemed to me extremely offensive when I read it. But it was a Xerox that was of a black square, and it said something like a view of Martin Luther King's mother's vagina, something like that. I took that down. I have to say, because I thought this is amazing. I've never seen anything like that. Put it up in my house, and then I noticed friendliest black artist on there, and then it wasn't until a year later, or it was right around that time that I realized you were in the Whitney. But what was interesting about that piece is it was at once something that seemed so incredibly offensive to you know, to a figure like Martin Luther King, but it was also something that was an impossibility. And even if it was something insulting, you couldn't even figure out why it was insulting. And it was this kind of maybe not so dissimilar from the language you're talking about now, but it was something it was almost hard to wrap my head around.
Like a process in a plane, the opposite possibility, just
I know you did other work on you know, as you're saying. The exact line I now remember it was Martin Luther King's penis from inside my father's vagina. Is that correct?
Okay.
So there it is. The black man, Martin Luther's penis from inside my father's vagina. Of course, something that's an impossibility. What kind of reaction did you get from that? Or did you get any reaction? Because it did say friendliest black artist on there, but otherwise... Fascinating. And so since then, I know there's been a number of projects, and I think, as we touched on earlier, the tour of racism was something I was very aware of at the time, and how that impacts, the art world in terms of censorship and what it means to be a black artist and the world today in America and a teacher and everything else. What was the most unusual reaction you've had to your work in the last few years? Was there anything that truly surprised you in reaction or conversations with people that you found surprising in some way, in the context of racism, what you're doing?
I guess
To work every situation she has to enormous advantage. And she told me once, if you're ever having a show and it's in a library or whatever, just make believe it's like MoMA and give it 200%, like it's the best show you've ever had, because there's no reason to do anything less. And she was having a show at the Drawing Center, and she said she gave a lecture, and in the lecture, what she did was she had some shills in the audience, people who'd respond to certain questions, and she had someone ask her about face lightening cream, that was referred to in some of her drawings. And she said, the idea of lightening your face, lightening your complexion, and straightening your hair is clearly, you know, trying to, you know, be less of who you are and kind of adopt this white culture. And it was destructive to blacks. And so then she has another shill in the audience stand up and say, well, I use face lightening cream, and I found that it's helped me in a lot of ways. And someone else said, yes, I think that. And then someone else was arguing with them. So it created this incredible tension that the audience was starting to, you know, to really, they were enjoying it, but it was kind of making that tension palpable instead of always putting it in a kind of academic terms where we can all digest it. And it seems to me that your work and the way you're talking about it, and even the language, kind of brings up some of those issues of what are we understanding or not understanding. I'm very tempted to start speaking in tongues now myself. It feels like how I should be conducting this interview. There's something that's not like an average conversation in many ways, but I'm brought into a world of sounds, of thinking, of trying to understand, which in many ways is probably how most people perceive contemporary art in a lot of ways. What's happening here? What's going on? I don't understand anything. And we seem to need a translator. And in general, you don't translate lectures or language. In conclusion, I'd like to ask you a little bit about is there anything you want to say to artists out there who are listening to this, you know, from all over the world? It's not just the Yale community or the student community, it's a lot of communities. Is there anything in particular you want to say to them? Popel, thank you so much for being with us today. I really enjoyed the conversation with you, and I'm grateful for you taking part in this show.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.